Off the ball. Rugby.
And that's the court, really, that I wouldn't be happy about if I was a player in that group. Take it out of context, and then you have a story and you have a situation. I think if he had his time back, he probably wouldn't.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Settle in.
On Off the Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.
Right, you are welcome back to another edition of Settle In with thanks to our friends at Guinness 0.0. I am unbelievably excited about our next guest. Vanessa Ogbonna is one of the winners of The Traitors, the inaugural Irish edition of The Traitors. Vanessa, is it too late to say congratulations?
Probably not. No, I'll take it. You know, thank
well, welcome
you.
To the studio. Great thank to have you. You in here. When you refer to yourself as a winner of this thing, are you happy to share it with Kelly and with Oyen? Does that actually make it sweeter?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think I think just even if you told me at the start, maybe not. Do you know what I mean? But I think from the journey of how it ended, I was very much like, I was ready to go a couple of times, so for me to have actually made it to the end, I think that's an accomplishment in itself. And then the way we ended up winning, for sure, it's just cherry on the top for me.
It was really surgical at the end, the way in which you achieved the victory. You almost killed the suspense, because there was suspense all the way along. Every single episode was absolutely crazy, and then the three of you were like, "No, we know what's what."
No.
In this final episode, that it was almost like watching a World Cup final, and the team ends up getting hammered in the end.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even then, a lot of people weren't, some people weren't happy with the way it ended, because people want that suspense to the end, and people want drama and they want chaos and they want somebody to steal it under. And I think some people thought I kind of gave that a bit at the end, where I was going to, I had a bit of silence before I revealed that I was a faithful. I scared the girls a little bit. But I think definitely for me, at that stage, I was being carried definitely by Oyen, and then Kelly being the decider. So for me, I was just kind of like, hey, thanks for trusting me. Let's get this done. Do you know what I mean? So
how is life different for you now compared to 2 months ago?
Oh, I'm so busy. And I thought I was busy before, but it's different busy. But it's really, really nice. It's just different events, kind of chats, press. Yeah, just free stuff. It's class.
Class. I mean, that sounds like a dream. It's amazing what a success it was. It feels almost nostalgic in a weird way, the idea of people watching TV at a certain time in the evening and communicating with their friends, texting their friends about it. It's just not something we have anymore.
We're used to. Streaming has definitely taken over. And I think, I didn't really think I'd be talking about this, but I think it's brings back community. I think we're all so individualized in everything, and as much as I love work from home, I understand that kind of water cooler moment that people had something to go in and talk about, and you just keep talking about it. I don't think it was something that anybody ever got tired of. You probably talking about it, go into a meeting, come back out of a meeting, talking about it again, think about something, you see something. And it was just honestly, it's such a privilege to be part of it, because when applying, nobody knew that it was going to do what it did. And I keep saying that it's a credit to the editors, credit to RT and everybody who was involved in that side, and that has nothing to do with us as characters. But to be able to be part of that, and for people to have loved it, hated it, felt anything towards it, I think that's it's class to be part of that.
It kind of feels like The Traitors Ireland and any live sport are the only two things that people actually want to consume in live TV right now and communicate about. There's kind of a similarity there. People will be familiar enough with your story from the penultimate episode of The Traitors, when there was a final sort of round table in a different room, and everybody told the story of their background. I wonder what the public's perception of you would have been had we known all that earlier, because I felt that, obviously, it's not that you were disliked in any way. I think you were very well liked, in fact. But actually, I think at that moment, people were like, God, right, that this story makes us root for her
context,
even more.
Context, right? Yeah. It gives you a little bit of context to me. And I think for me, obviously I've been me my whole life, but I don't tend to be what people expect. I'm very much a very confident person, but I'm equally very emotional. And I think that kind of can throw you. I think it's easier to accept people that are very linear. And I think I'm not linear. And I guess the context of my life gives kind of an understanding of all of those parts. I grew up as a very, very confident football player, and you know what sports does to people. You almost carry your shoulders up like people in primary school. I don't know if it happens anymore, but you win a medal on the weekend and I'm going around every class telling them about what I won and what I did. And that was who I grew up to be. Whereas like, then after that, life kind of takes you down a notch in certain ways. You learn empathy, true grief. You kind of start questioning different things. And then for me, I've been kind of going through a journey of like vulnerability and understanding the power of that. And then being part of social media as well, you almost, I think I was probably the best at telling my story on the show, but it's because I've done it before. You know, you start to understand what parts of you that people connect with, right? And even the direct provisions part of it was very weird for me because everybody's like, oh, thanks for sharing that. And I'm like, it's just my life, you know? And since then, you just don't really understand what everybody else is going through. And I think it just makes you a little bit more human. I think at that stage, we were all just characters in a game. And when you hear the different things that people are going through, like with Ben, and obviously he's sharing about his parents, like somebody who's gone through the same situation with like parents going through cancer and all those things, like they can connect with that. Maybe some people can connect with me, people can connect with Kelly, you know, like, and I think that was a really powerful moment in the show because it really just brought us down to like level playing field. Like we're all literally just human beings at the end of the day, whereas before people were really having a very weird parasocial relationship with us where it's like we're not humans, we're just rats in this kind of race in the game, you know? So it was really nice to kind of see people's reaction to that.
That's so interesting. Like that, it's a very deliberate thing to leave that moment until the end of the show because they almost want you to be these, not devoid of personality individuals, but they try and remove the backstory, that the beginning of your story has to be when you're lined up outside the castle, and then actually we get the human aspect right at the end. So that's a very deliberate thing.
Yeah. I do like that though, because you know, sometimes you're watching shows and you're just like, sorry for the sob story, but I still want you to lose. Do you know what I mean? And I think I do think it worked well for us, whereas, you know, stuff like, I don't know, other TV shows and people are going to a competition and then like they just throw in a really sad story and you're like, this kind of, I don't want to root for this person. And I think people, whether or not they rooted for me or not, I think they were able to either see Vanessa's part of the game and then Vanessa's a person. And I think that's kind of how I've been experiencing people since. It's either you see me as a character and you operate with me as a character, or it's like, look, regardless of what I thought about you in the game, it's kind of like kudos, well done for this side of things. So I think that's been really nice anyway.
Let's talk about Vanessa the footballer then.
Yay.
When does she arrive on the scene? When do you first realise, geez, I'm quite good at this thing?
Very young, like since literally the first day I touched the ball. Like I was always very hyperactive, very just busy. And initially in Tramore, I'd been already part of the athletic team and I was doing Irish dancing at the time, realised that wasn't for me. And my brother was like my best friend and we did everything together. We did athletics together. So from primary school, I went to kind of Irish dancing. I don't know if it still happens, but you know, it's always used to be in like a church hall, kind of freezing Saturday morning. You know what I mean? I'm there at my denim skirt and everybody's in the dresses, like big curly hair. This is how much you know that I was like not self-aware at all at that age. I was like, class, not thinking like, yeah, you're sticking out so much here. And my brother then decided to go to football one morning, which was also on a Saturday. And I was like to my dad, like, why is he going to that? Like, I want to go to that. My dad was like, no, you're going to this. I'm like, no, I want to go to that too. So I went to Irish dancing, walked the whole other side of Tramore. And then my brother was there. It was split into four quadrants. And there was like one quadrant that was for girls. And a lot of the girls that were in there were either in my primary school, which I'd recently just started, or in the athletic team. So they like called me in. And like instantly I was like, dad, like, can I go? Like, I actually, to be fair, probably was still wearing the skirt from Irish dancing now that I think back to it. And one of the coaches there was like, yeah, just let her in. I think I ran around for like 5 minutes and I was bet. Right. And then they were like, yeah, just keep bringing her back, and quit Irish dancing straight away. Kept coming, and I signed for one of the underage teams there like a couple of weeks later. And it was just kind of from there, just had a natural talent, had a natural flair for the sport. And then the community in Tramore at the time, which is very unusual for early 2000s, there was a lot of girls teams. So I never played with a boys team. We were never stuck for a team. In fact, there was like A, Bs of the team. So I think I came in at a very like good time into the club, into a good club, which was like developing schoolgirls football. So
how did your dad react when he found out that you ditched the dancing for the football?
I'm sure he was happy about it. Like, my dad was a massive Arsenal fan and nobody knew anything about Irish dancing in my family, so you know, yeah. I'm sure they were fine. Funnily enough, I didn't, from a young age, I had already been like breaking gender norms, kind of, in the sense that like as a African female at the time, you're not really seeing a lot of women in sport in just in general, let alone in wider community. So my dad didn't really think anything of it. It was just something that was fun, and my brother was going as well. So I guess for him, it was probably easier instead of having to go to Irish dance and then go to football as well.
Yeah, like did you have any female sports role models growing up then?
No, I actually realised recently that I didn't. Stephen Gerrard was one of the reasons why I liked football, one of the reasons I started supporting Liverpool, for example. And one of my very tangible dreams was to become the first ever female footballer to play in the men's league. And I would play the last year of Stephen Gerrard's before he retired. So you know what he did with like Henderson?
Yeah.
That was meant to be me, you know? So that was the dream that I had. And I grew up as a tomboy, and a lot of my influences were male like athletes, and a lot of the kind of positive influences in my life as well, like at the time were like people in the club. So for me, I grew up very much like not really understanding. And at the time there wasn't really a lot of positive footballing female athletes, do you know what I mean, at the time. And there wasn't a lot of money in it either. So yeah, no, definitely more focus on the male side of things.
Because this obviously goes from what is a hobby and something that every child should have the opportunity to do into something that can become a serious opportunity for you. At what stage during your childhood and your adolescence do you start to realise, God, this is actually something that I'm very, very adept at?
Probably, was I like seven? I can't remember the years. It was either 2007 or I was seven. I think it was 2007. And in about 2009, I had gotten a call up to, like, I think it was like the Emerging Talents and all of those things. So I was doing that. I was playing probably two or three teams for Tramore. I had been playing Wexford Schoolgirls. I had been playing any of the kind of regional things that would come up. And then it came to the time to kind of have the underage, I think under 15s team at the time. And I'd gotten called up for that, made it to like the last round before then realizing that actually I can't play for Ireland because I was an Irish resident and not a citizen at the time, which was like very heartbreaking. But like from about that, literally from the get-go, I kind of had an idea that I'm good at this thing. And then with being able to play for multiple teams, it was kind of obvious as well. And then I guess not making that team was probably the worst thing that had happened. Well, yeah, worst thing that happened at the time. And it was like the process that I had in my head, it was like, you play for a club, you play for a region, then you play for country. Like, yeah. There's, if I can't play for country, what am I doing? And there wasn't the League of Ireland set up that there is now. So I think the age to play for Wexford Youth at the time was 17 or something. And me and myself and Aisling Frawley, one like a girl that had played for Wexford Youth, had been called up from Tramore to train with Wexford for a year or two or something. And to me, that just didn't make sense to sign for a team and not train. So as a child and very rational person, I was like, well, there's no point playing football anymore if I can't play for Ireland right now. So I think if I'd had probably more understanding of where I was in the process, or if I had somebody to be like, hey, look, like, and I think nobody really knew how long it would take. Nobody knows how long it would take to get your residency or nationalisation and all those things. So it's something that we could have been waiting for forever. It's something that could have never happened. So for me, it's like, this external thing is stopping me from playing football, so I'm just going to stop playing football.
Yeah, because I did wonder where like football sits in terms of your story of belonging. Like, is it something that you excel at and therefore you get a greater sense of self as somebody who's come through the direct provision system in Ireland and makes a home here? Or is it actually something because of that story there where you're deemed to be a resident and not a citizen, and it actually holds back your career and then your sense of belonging is in a vague space?
Weirdly enough, I've never questioned my sense of belonging until the riots in 2023. Like, wow. I grew up more Irish than I did Nigerian, which caused a lot of problems for me at home, because as a child, like, you just have access to what you have. You're not thinking of what else is going on. And once again, like, I think this is kind of the unfair part of sport. It's like, once you're good at something, nobody cares. Nobody cares where you're from, nobody cares about your attitude, nobody cares about whatever. So I think growing up, I was definitely a very cocky child because I was the fastest. I was quite big for my age. So there was a lot of things that I was able to get away with until about like 18. Now I have to figure out how to take an actual touch. Do you know what I mean? Instead of just like losing the ball and then running after it. So there's a lot of things in my development that allowed me to excel very quickly. And that is, again, nobody cares where you're from when you are scoring a bunch of goals, you know? And luckily as well, I actually, as part of United FC, like, we went back to Tramore and met with my coach, Peter, and he was kind of saying, like, nobody they didn't think of that either. You know, like, it was very new to everybody at the time. And weirdly enough, Tremor at the time seems to be more progressive than a lot of places now. But it was just like, they just accepted me, saw me as a child. And we were going to, like, my favorite story is going, driving somewhere. And I'm doing, like, my geography, like, tests in the back, or, like, my Irish exam, or like, he's, like, quizzing me. Like, cause, so he's, like, it's not just football, like, he's nurturing me as a person, you know, like, and because that's the only way I was allowed to go, is if I'm doing my homework. So getting picked up from school, bopping over to Wexford, playing a game, coming back home, like, 10 o'clock, like, as a teenager, that's a lot, you know. And I was playing, like I said, with girls older than me, so they were grand, but I'm in the back of the car, like, doing my homework, and Peter's making sure the music is, like, low enough for me to concentrate. If I'm talking too much, I'm getting in trouble. So it's almost like a father figure already, do you know what I mean? So it is fully my sense of belonging and identity at that age, you know.
So did the rest of your family have a more difficult time, I guess, finding their place in Ireland because they weren't as talented as you in terms of,
no,
like, that sporting thing?
Luckily enough, my brother's class as well. Like, okay. he was playing with the boys team at that time. He quit football and chose athletics, and I quit athletics and chose football, actually. Okay. So it's the same thing. It was like, and I think it's less about, it's more just about the people we met and the community. Right. And I think, if anything, I would even say that accelerated my mom and dad's integration into this country.
Of course.
In the sense that, like, when you're in direct provision, you're just in this house with a bunch of other people that aren't in the community. Whereas in sport, my parents have to show up to the games, or they're talking to people in my school, or they're talking to people in football, and they're meeting my friends' parents, because if I'm going for lunch after school with someone, they need to know who that is, and people are able to help them out, or give, like, some people we've met, like, able to give my mom a job or something like that, do you know what I mean? So if anything, it was a whole community thing. And I think some people are probably sick of me mentioning Tremor every 2 seconds, but when you have context of that, like, you can't, I'm nothing but grateful because of the people that I encountered, you know, and for my parents as well. And it's done a great deal for them as well, you know, till now. Go home every Christmas, see my athletic coach, you know. It's more than just, oh, you just played this sport and whatever. I think at the time people were really invested in seeing us grow as kids, you know,
not so, just to be a very useful part of,
yeah,
our team in a few years time. Sounds like an amazing place.
Class.
To be fair,
I don't know if it's the same now, but
yeah,
you know, when it was, that was the experience that I had with the people there. So I'll always mention that, because, like you said, it is the reason I felt like I was part of the community, you know.
So you talked there about the under 15 call up, and, you know, the dreams being shattered a little bit at the age of 13 temporarily,
mm-hmm,
while the citizenship thing is up for grabs, or it's a conversation that's happening. Talk to us then about where sport takes you in your collegiate life.
So coming off the back of that, then I just kind of didn't train as hard anymore. I didn't really care, so I'd eat whenever I wanted. I think I was in, like, going into, like, third year or something. The time is all muddled up. Going into about third year, I'd say, and at that stage, I just didn't care anymore. I was like, all right, cool. I'd already started the process to go to America because one of the girls had done it in Tremor, and I just kind of put that on hold, just was doing my CAO, all those things, and then accepted UCC, went to UCC, signed with Cork City FC, and then I think, I remember we played against Wexford, and I think they bet us, like, 10-1. And that was the biggest revelation I've ever had as a football player, because these are girls that I've played with growing up, that I've trained with. Like, some of them I, at a point, would have considered myself better than, and I'm nowhere where I should be. I'm nowhere near them. They're running rings around me, you know, and that was just like, now I have to leave here, because at the time there wasn't, once again, there's not as clear a pathway now in 2014. As there would be now, do you know what I mean? So for me, that was the only out that I saw, because I didn't have the funds or the resources to go have my own trainer or have coaching sessions or whatever. So luckily, again, this is really a look at the Irish story, but my coaches in Oakland University were two ex footballers for Ireland, so Mag Soren and Claire Scanlon. So they had played for Ireland. They were coaches at Oakland University. I'd gone to a showcase in London and they'd seen me there, and I was overweight and I was unfit, but they saw something in me, and they took the chance, and yeah, I signed for Oakland University.
On a scholarship, obviously.
On a full scholarship, which is crazy as well, because it's like, my education was great, so I could have, they could have at least So with the scholarships, like, you're trying to get as much money from multiple places. You don't want to give a player a full scholarship with sport, because then that limits how much you're going to give another player. Sure. So some people will balance school, academic and sport. But even though I could have gotten an academic scholarship, they were like, nah, like, they just thought I deserved it. So it was something that I was very grateful for as well, because there's no way I would have been able to afford the American system if not, you know.
Talk to us about how the American dream then goes for you in terms of expectations versus reality.
American nightmare. America was amazing. Absolutely loved it. I go there in August, absolutely scorching hot heat that I've never felt or played in before. So initially I'm struggling because the American style of football is a lot more athletic than it is over here. And it's just a bunch of running. We have like 3 months of preseason just running in that heat. And I just wasn't doing great until the sun went down. And then around September, October, started kind of finding my feet. The American collegiate system is different here as well. It has a little bit of a roll off kind of feature, so I would probably come on middle of the first half, come off in the second half, or no, middle of the first half, stay on for the second half, and then come off kind of 20 minutes left in the game. So that was how they kind of kept my stamina kind of at bay, because like power wise I was kind of on top, but with the stamina I wasn't like lasting as long. After our first season, then I think, did we win our first season? Yeah, we won the championship. And then you go into a postseason in America, and then that's basically like you're just keeping in shape. There's really no out of season. And at that stage, I'm coming into myself. I'm getting fitter. I play our first postseason game. I'm the only person who plays 90 minutes. I score 2 goals. Like, I'm starting to see where I'm going to be come next year. And about 5 days later after that game, I tear my ACL in training, which was also like it was a collision as well, which is also unusual for female athletes. It's usually just like you just step and your knee goes a certain way.
Did you know it was that at the time? Like, instantaneously you thought this is bad?
I think they knew. Right. I didn't know, because I was like, okay, I'll come off, I sit, and I'll see you guys next week for Michigan State. And everybody was just looking at me like, do you understand what's happening? And I was just like, because I'd never had a proper injury at the time. Like, okay. I'd had like niggles here and there, do you know what I mean? And they were, I think my like personal trainer knew, but they just didn't tell me because I would have freaked out.
So they tell you obviously that it's a very serious injury after that, and like, I'm sure you're aware of what an ACL is.
Yeah,
at that point.
Yeah, long.
At what stage do you realise then that it's potentially, you know, I don't want to say a life-changing one, but a career-altering one.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think instantly, because at that stage, I had worked so hard to kind of get to where I was. Like, and I think one thing that people don't realize, like, in like kind of American team dynamics, like, it's very catty, it's very competitive. Like, you don't, once a player comes in, like, it's not like here, sometimes you can be friendly. Like, people don't want you to come in. So the second I came in, it wasn't really, we were all friends off the pitch, but you kind of knew that like people were going for your spot. So when it was like clear that, okay, initially I wasn't really showing the potential that they had seen in me because I was struggling, I think once that was kind of come true, it was clear where I was going to be on the team. So for me, that was like very mentally challenging because, like I said, I'd worked for about 9 months or so. I'm trying to get to this place. Now I'm here, and you just don't know how the body's going to fare with something like that, you know? But luckily with that system there, you have insurance and everything. So you get the best of the best of the best. But it was a very challenging experience. And then obviously like in that time, my dad passed away as well. So I think in a sense, the grief made me like fully, like kind of go heavy into the recovery, because it was like, there's nothing I can do about my dad passing away, but there is something I can do about getting back to football, you know. So I you know, sometimes when people lose something, they just go really like workaholics or whatever, and that was me. I think it made me more tunnel vision than ever into the sport. So even like now, my right knee, which is where I tore my ACL, is actually stronger than my left knee, because I was just so obsessed with getting back to it. I lost so much weight. I was so much fitter coming out the other end of that. So for me, from a career athletic point of view, I actually came out better at the other end. But I think the grief had something to do with kind of that drive to be better, you know?
Does that end up postponing the grief to some degree, given you're so focused on this thing?
Yeah, 100%. Because I'm not at home. So I think it's like initially, like that summer was the hardest, because it was like April. Was it April? April, May. Yeah, April that it all happened. And then I got my surgery, I think in May. And then school's done. So I'm in America over summer by myself because everybody goes back to, like, everybody leaves campus. So I'm actually on campus for the summer. Do you know what I mean? So I think I've one or two friends that live in Michigan, but other than that, it's just me. All my teammates have gone to Canada, gone to England, gone wherever they're from, because most people don't actually come from the state that they're in, kind of thing. So it's all I had all summer. So it's the only thing I could do was go to the physio. Do you know what I mean?
So you get injured, your dad passes away suddenly.
Then three weeks after.
Mm-hmm. Then you get the surgery.
Yeah.
And then you're in kind of this solitary recovery state. The obvious question is, was that lonely? But maybe the focus just completely kept you going.
It definitely was lonely, because it's like, there's only so much you can do by yourself in a day. And like my close friend now, like my friend Jimmy, like his family lived in Michigan and they were lovely. So like most afternoons, at least once or twice a week, I do something with their family. Do you know what I mean? And he played for the men's team as well. And then there was like camps and all on. So like I was kept busy enough, but like it's just you and yourself in this room. Do you know what I mean? And then America has like summer school as well. So that was nice because there was like people on campus. So I wasn't by myself on campus as well.
Yeah. When you end up going home, do you end up getting, do you go home when your dad dies?
I came back to Ireland, but he was living in Nigeria at the time. So that kind of messed things up. Like my mom and my brother went to Nigeria, but I came here and I was just with my sister for a week and then I went back to college.
Was there any temptation just to pack in the United States at this point? Be with your sister, be with your family?
At that stage, there's no point. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, all I can see is this is all I can do. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing else. Like moving back to Ireland would have meant restarting and I would have just been where I was at Cork City. Do you know what I mean? And at that stage, it's like, there's only one thing that I have that's at least in my control, and that's like my fitness. And also moving back to Ireland at the time, I wouldn't have gotten the same level of care that I would have there. Like, whereas a lot of people, you hear people have like ACL tears and they're never the same again. It's because you can't afford going to physio every day. Like, whereas there I'm seeing a physiotherapist for like 2 hours for multiple times a week. And then we have a therapist on campus as well. So like the care was kind of second to none. So it just kind of made sense, you know?
So you see out the rest of your time in the United States, and then you do end up coming back to Ireland to do a master's in UCC.
Yeah.
Is football still very much the dream at this point?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned something that I've actually never thought and never vocalised, but until college was done, my grief was postponed. And then at that stage, it all came crashing back. So the point, like the plan was never to come back to Ireland. But once I was done my college, I was like, everything that I'd postponed over those years, the loneliness, it's like America moves like 90 miles an hour all the time. There's no time for downtime. You're always thinking about your career. A lot of the girls who go through collegiate system label themselves as retired, but you're 20, really? 21. But it's because they've been growing up for so long. Like this is the pinnacle. You're basically treated as like a professional. Everything is paid for you. All your food is given. You graduate and there's no real, unless you're drafted in or do something NCAA like worthy, you're not playing football anymore. And it's not where, as Ireland does better with kind of like the league aspect. There's no, like America's massive, like leagues aren't as, it's mainly just a kick around for most people unless you're professional or semi-professional. And that's very hard to get into. Okay. So for me, it was like my dream was finish college. I thought I'd have had good enough stats leaving to be able to like get drafted or get scouted for one of the professional teams and then kind of graft my way into professional football. But then coming back to Ireland then, that was kind of held off. And I was like, okay, cool, let me get my master's, have an education in the back pocket, because as a woman, you have to have something. And then it just kind of went pear-shaped after that.
How do you mean?
Well, came back to Ireland trying to play with Wexford Youth, and I think once again I left with no kind of like credibility, if that makes sense. Like, so I'd gone from like being a star player, like winning Golden Boots, winning Player of the Year season, all that, and like the Wexford Schoolgirls League, whereas that into the League of Ireland, it's not a comparison. Do you know what I mean? Whereas when I played for Cork City at the time ran a great team. Like, I think we were finishing last, and I wasn't really anything in the league, and the league has kind of gone on about 3-4 years, so you're not anyone. So I'm kind of coming in off the back of America thinking that would hold me in a system that like and I joined a team with Rihanna Jarre, like it was never going to work. Do you know what I mean? So it was just kind of, they had their setup and they had the way things were, and I was in Waterford and that was the only team that made sense for me to sign with. So coming into that structure from kind of the tactical, political aspect of football, it wasn't going to fare very well for me, because I was always kind of second, third striker. And then at the time, Blessing Kingsley was playing under 19s for Ireland. So it's like two, like, international players and then me, do you know what I mean? So I was always kind of in that cycle trying to push to be better, and it just wasn't working, which is why I wanted to go pro in England then after.
Yeah, so this goes through a TV show?
Yes.
The ambitions that you have to go pro in the UK.
So it's weird. So I signed with an agent, and once again, because I got injured for most of my season. Then the last season I had with my team wasn't great. Like, we just weren't great as a team. And I played with Wexford, but I wasn't the main player. So on paper, that doesn't look like anything for a professional team, and clips are kind of neither here nor there at that stage. My main clips were from Oakland, where I've just played 3 years or something, 2.5, I think, with Wexford Youth. So she's aware of like this TV show, and I think Hayley Nolan had gone through the same TV show the first season, and she was like, okay, like, there's some potential here to kind of like get scouted while doing this TV show, Annie Aluko and the Camilla sisters and all of that. So I was like, all right, cool, let me go and do that, make a name in London a little bit, get some contacts. In the process of that, I get COVID in January 2021, and I was actually talking about this today. So remember the incubation period or the isolation period? It's like 2 weeks. So that's the start of January, but that's also the start of pre-season. So I literally just took my isolation period, and then once I started feeling better, I was back doing the running by myself, and I went straight back into football, which is the worst thing you can do right after having a virus like COVID. It was the first virus that was like killer. So that was it. I really just didn't let my body rest, and I think that's where like all the problems kind of started. My GP thought it was just like long COVID. So I had some long COVID symptoms. So I was like, all right, cool, if there's nothing I can do about it, then I'm just going to keep training. And so just kept training. And then in and about April, May again, which is when we were filming in London, like, my body was just had enough. I went from like training with Wexford 3 times a week or something to now training and filming in London pretty much all day, twice a day, 2 training sessions a day for 4 days. At the end of those 4 days, my body was just like not functioning. And I remember, like, if you end up being able to watch the series, there's one day where you just don't see me. It's because I was like, they were like, oh, take a nap for like the first session. I slept through the whole day because I think that was the first bit of rest that I had in like months, I'd say. And then in that process, then realizing there's actually something seriously wrong with my body. Like, if you see any of the clips of that, like, my face is like massive, my hands are massive, my legs are swollen. Found out there was like fluid in my lungs and around my heart, and my body's just not working. So then the format of the show is, however many girls come in the first week, you now dwindle down to, I think, like 15 or something. That team plays the professional team, and Funner Scouts like met the likes of like Joe Cole and everything, and like some different like professional players that came in. So then you make the second week, and like, it, watching the show back, one of the comments on like the first day was like, me and this other girl who ended up being pro in South America were like the two favorite players. But then at like the fourth day, she was like, oh, Vanessa's great, but she's basically a cone. Like, she's not moving. It's like, realize that I can't physically move. But I'm trying, like, as a forward, if you understand the game a bit, little bit, you don't need to move that much to be effective.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I was kind of having a little bit of like, just using my brain, instead, where my body's not really working. So I just ended up playing a 9. Like, I tried different positions because I was just like, I don't really care where I get scouted, I'll play. Because I played everywhere on the pitch. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll just play as a 9, like a just holding striker, play the ball, turn, shoot. That was all I wanted to do that time. And then they could see the difference, you know? So yeah, then they were like, look, Marley, we actually can't let you go through because something is wrong with you. And I was like, no, please. Came back to Ireland in hospital for a week, and yeah, I got diagnosed with lupus after that, and it's an autoimmune illness. So
what's the process to recover from that like?
So essentially it's just my immune system. Okay. And when I speak about it, everybody's like, you're not taking this seriously. It's because my immune system is attacking healthy cells. Does that not seem very silly to you?
It seems very serious.
Yeah, it is serious, but to me it's so silly because it's like, you're meant to not do that, right? Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So that's like, when they told me, I was like, oh my God, of course this is what I get.
That's what lupus is.
Yeah, it's like, it's an autoimmune illness. It's like my immune system is not functioning correctly. It's attacking healthy cells, mainly in my kidney. And then that's why like the fluid is not being like dealt with properly. And obviously, the longer that goes untreated, then obviously you can like kind of die from that.
Can you medicate to ensure that it's not an issue?
Exactly. So it's not, it's a long-term chronic illness. Like, so right now, like I'm on medication and I will be pretty much for the rest of my life.
But it doesn't affect your day-to-day, really?
Not for the most part. Like as long as I take my meds, like I'm currently like in a state of kind of remission.
Okay.
But kind of as a woman, like, anything can flare it up. Like if I get pregnant or something, that can flare it up because it's just like stress, heavy stress on the body is a kind of an identifier for that.
So football is at one point in your life the central thing in your life. You have a very strange incident that leads to your ACL going. Mm. Your body starts attacking itself. How do you deal with that? Is it a sort of, I need to kind of come to terms with this right now? Mm. Or what's the mindset in the middle of all of that?
Well, I signed with DLR Waves 2 years later, so clearly I wasn't coming to terms with that very well. So football was my identity at the time. So it's so weird right now that I have to tell people that I played football, whereas the majority of people who knew me prior to 2021 knew me as Vanessa the football player. Whereas now it's like content creator, winner of traders, whatever. And it was really hard to take because I didn't know anything else. I realized, and I don't know if you've watched this, but Thierry Henry was on Diary of the CEO, and that, I broke down watching that because nobody has ever articulated how I felt when he spoke about leaving the game. And he said essentially that, like, you either leave the game or the game leaves you. So like, there's no way to leave football at a high level in a positive manner. You're either on top of the game, you leave it, and now you don't know how to deal with, and that's what he was saying. Like, he obviously left at a very high point of his career. He doesn't really know how to be a regular person, or it's taken away from you, and you spend your life trying to kind of chase that back. And that's where I was still trying to do everything to get that back, where exercise is great for the body. Being a professional footballer with lupus is actually a stress on my body. So that's kind of what happened when I signed with DLR Waves. I'd gone through preseason, but near the end, it was just too much. And I just kept getting flare up after every training session. And then I just couldn't actually play, you know? So I left literally about 2 or 3 weeks into the season.
And you knew at that point that was going to be it in terms of
football?
Yeah,
that was it done. Like, it had to be.
And did the Henry clip make you emotional because you realised then that you would have had to go through this divorce process with your sport at one point?
Divorce of identity, more than anything, because like I said, from a young age, and once again, just the way where football was at the start, I picked being an athlete over being a girl. Like, it wasn't an option, right? Like, the way I did my hair, the way I dressed, I was very much, excuse me, a tomboy. Like, I never did my nails. I wasn't into makeup. Like, I just wearing a tracksuit 24/7 because this is my whole identity. Like, there's nowhere that I didn't go that I didn't let you know that I played football.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So now I'm going into the world. I'm like 20 something. It's funny. I'm starting to date people. I was dating someone and I didn't really think this was going to come up today. Actually, it was so funny. Dating someone, I told him I'd played like Champions League qualifiers. He was obsessed with that and gave me the ick because I was just like, as a man, like, do you know what I mean? You should be playing Champions League, not me. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's now like the finding of myself in a society that I don't fit into.
Well, then can I ask you, how do you react to people calling you Vanessa from the Traders?
Oh, it's fine now. I don't mind. I won 14K. Like, do you know what I mean?
You won the thing, so it's a pretty positive thing. But like, are you happy with that being your identity to a few million people? Like, I guess we don't know you. So we're like...
Exactly. Like, so me, I've worked on my identity since then. My identity is not rooted in the things that I do, whether good or bad anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I've done a lot of work. Like, I've spoken about my fate a little bit. Like, that's something that has grounded me as a person. And I've started working with the Shona Project, and I did a speech with the girls, and I said, my hope for mainly women, but I guess anybody, men can get this as well. It's just like, that people will realize that if nothing was ever added or taken away from your life right now, like, you are enough and you're worth good things. And I think my worth came from being a good footballer. My worth came from scoring goals. My worth came from being recognized from a young age. Like, and if that wasn't given to me, like, who was I? And that kind of transcended into kind of work life now, transcended into like social media, because from a young age, I was told, whether like directly or indirectly, that like your worth is directly connected to your performance, you know? So it's something that I've taken away. So whether I won, lost, traitors or didn't, whatever, whatever that becomes, it's not my identity. So right now, like, yes, you know me as Vanessa from the Traitors or wherever people meet me, that's great, but it's a thing that I'm doing right now, but it's not who I'm deep, what I'm deeply rooted in, you know? So it's like that kind of self-awareness and work. And when you go through so much grief, because that's what it was, like I was grieving my dad, I was grieving my, initially grieving my sport, which was my identity with tearing my ACL, also what I was grieving at 13 but didn't know, you know? So I've grieved this thing for so long that I had to become like a professional at grieving, do you know what I mean? So and I think another thing with grief is that everybody knows it's not linear. So when I'd moved back to Ireland, that's when I started grieving my dad. So this was 3 years later. And in that process, you go through a whole bunch of emotion, you know? And while doing that, trying to play football, and all of these things are happening, I'm just a constant state of grief for so many years. And it's like in that I'm having to rebuild who I am because everything that I knew was formally taken away, do you know what I mean?
Is grieving your sport as complicated and as long lasting as grieving a family member? I presume not. Maybe it is.
It is. Because grief is grief. The brain doesn't know.
True.
It doesn't know what it is. Do you know what I mean? And I think with family members, you have your own relationship with them as well. And I think with death so suddenly, there's a lot of things unanswered. Do you know what I mean? It's the same thing with football. I don't know whether I was good enough to become a professional footballer. And that was something that was hanging over my head. And even now I've come to a place where I'm healthy enough to talk about it. I never spoke about football because I felt like when I'm, I was working with the FAI for a bit, when I'm meeting the girls that I've played before, I can't say that I didn't tell anybody that I got signed or did whatever at 13, because it's just one of those things where people are like, oh yeah, I could have gone pro, but I broke my knee. But to me, it was fully tangible for me to become a professional footballer. Do you know what I mean? And it's so weird having that. There's no real answer to that. And everybody has their take on that. So I was so ashamed to kind of talk about that because it's something that's unanswered. And if anything, you don't know me. You didn't see me play. I could be making this all up.
No, but maybe that's actually bigger than the 14K that you won. Is actually the ability to tell the country, you know, I could have been a contender.
Yeah, guys, I remember when I was 17, yeah. I was class. Do you know what I mean? And it's so hard. And a lot of those girls that I played with have gone on to do great things, you know? And it's like, what I wanted to do, when I was making my dream up, what they're doing wasn't available. So it's weird because it's what I wanted to do is available now. I just didn't know it would be available 10, 15 years later. But they're doing it. They're doing great. The girls are doing great. But it's like, when the girls are flipping, going to the World Cup, I'm not going to be like, hey, remember I used to play with you guys? You know, it's a weird thing. I've had to have dealt with it, and I'm in a better place about it now. So it's just this part of the journey that I've had to kind of go through.
Can you get joy out of watching football?
No, I don't. I remember before I signed with DLR, I think I went to a Wexford youth game in DLR. It was Wexford youth or DLR, and I left half time. Just couldn't, it was just, I don't even support a team anymore, really. It's just not. And somebody told me to say, oh, you can go into coaching. And actually, when I announced I was kind of quitting because of lupus, everybody's like, oh, come coach, come do your badges. No, I'm not a coach. I can't. So I think doing United FC is almost like a full circle moment for me, because right now I don't think I can be a coach or be whatever, but I think for women in sport, branding is really important and marketing is really important. And whether it's said or unsaid, unfortunately, there's not enough done for girls for whatever reason. You can have the debate of whether women should get paid or whatever, but I just think in general, people are working just as hard, if not twice as hard. And at the end of the day, what is it really for? You know, the wider community. And I kind of had this thought a couple of weeks ago, massive players from League of Ireland retired. And I was thinking, at one stage, I would have wanted to have flipping 100 and whatever goals, caps, all of these things. But what do they get from that? You know, some of them are going straight back to work, and it's a shame that they've spent so much of their life playing this thing. And as much as we care about football, the wider world won't maybe respect them as much for it. And that kind of broke my heart. So for me, I guess my focus now is okay, how can we tell stories of football players or whatever, and to the next generation? Because branding is really important. If young girls can't see a benefit of missing parties, of going to the next other side of the country for however many hours of like Saturdays spending on a pitch, why would they do it? You know, because I think we didn't have access to the information, but right now they do. Do you know what I mean? So it's like everybody wants to do stuff that looks glamorous. And is being a female athlete in Ireland sometimes as glamorous as it should be? You know, and obviously that's not why you play it. But no. I think from my side of things and where I'm standing, being in media and stuff like that, I would love for them to get a little bit more exposure, you know. And I think that trickles down as well, because as part of the show, like one of the girls, I think she's like second year or something, she was like, oh, I might have to think of whether I'm going to quit football for my junior cert. One of these boys are playing four sports for like seven teams, and he doesn't care about that because he knows that there's something, whether he's going to get in GA, whether he's going to get in football, he's going to get some level of kind of notoriety from this. Whereas the girls are kind of like, oh, what's the point still, you know? So, and that was kind of a heartbreaking kind of realization for me, you know?
I think by the time this goes out, the first episode at least of United FC is it's not dropping all at once, it's coming out
once every week. I think sorry, I'm kind of jumping all over the place.
Not at all. I think United FC, it's going to be a 6-part series for RTE, so that's going to be dropping probably now if you're listening to this anytime close to when we've been recording. Vanessa, it's been great chatting to you.
Thank you.
It's been an absolutely fascinating conversation. It's a fascinating story that I'm sure you've told plenty of times over the last couple of weeks, but congratulations on a hell of a year so far.
Thank you.
And best of luck with the new series as well.
Thank you so much. And this is actually my favorite conversation. I think like not a lot of people understand the sport aspect, you know, so it's nice to be able to like, because there's a lot of things that I've told you that I actually haven't said before, which is great obviously for the pod, it's really nice to be able to kind of go through that as well. This is kind of therapeutic for me also.
Great, well thank you for trusting us with that, Vanessa.
Lovely, thank you. Cheers. So much, thanks for having me.
Settle in
on Off the Ball.
It's brought to you by Guinness 0.0.